On November 6th and 7th, 2004, the Green Festival took place in San Francisco. The festival, sponsored by Global Exchange and Co-op America, was billed as the world's largest green event. Coming a few days after George W. Bush's presidential election victory, the timing of the festival couldn't have been better. Greens and progressives, many of whom had worked long hours in an exhaustive campaign to defeat Bush, had been depressed all week. The Bush administration has not made environmental health one of its priorities. According to Robert F. Kennedy Jr. of the National Resources Defense Council, quote, the Bush administration has initiated more than 200 major rollbacks of America's environmental laws, weakening the protection of our country's air, water, public lands, and wildlife, close quote. The speakers at the Green Festival created an inspirational, focused, and healing atmosphere, lifting folks from paralyzing depression into the realization that there had been progress and that hope lies in organization for the future. The convention hall was filled to capacity. People flooded the speech areas, occupying all the chairs and sitting on the floor in the aisles. One of the speakers was Dr. George Lakoff, a linguistics professor at UC Berkeley and one of the founders of the Rock Ridge Institute, a progressive think tank. In 1997, Dr. Lakoff published a book, Moral Politics: How Liberals and Conservatives Think. He is uniquely capable of introducing a dialogue about the differences in moral beliefs among Americans. His most recent book is titled, Don't Think of an Elephant. He began his speech by discussing the recent election.
This is a remarkable time, as you probably noticed. 56 million people voted for John Kerry. We are 56 million strong. 51% is not a mandate. You heard what Bush said the other day. He said, I want to reach out to all the people. I want to be bipartisan. I want to reach out to all the people who share our views. We don't share his views. And there are 56 million of us who voted this time and more who didn't. We have to be united and strong. And to be united and strong, we have to know what it is that brings us together, what our moral values are. And it's no surprise to me at all that moral values turned out to be the major issue in this debate. We have values that are powerful and are traditional American values. And I want to speak a little bit about what our values are versus what their values are in detail. Their values. They understand morality and the nation in terms of what they call family values, but it's a particular kind of family, what I call a strict father family. It's a family that has it's an ideal model of the family they project onto morality and onto everything in every domain of life. Here's how it works. The assumption is the world is dangerous and there's evil out there. It will always be evil out there. And the world is difficult and competitive. It will always be competitive. There will always be winners, and there must always be losers. The idea is to win. Kids are born bad in the sense that they just want to do what feels good. That's terrible. They have to be taught right from wrong. The reason you need a strict father is to defend the family, to support the family, and to teach the kids absolute right from absolute wrong. And how do you do that? Through punishment, painful enough so that kids will want to avoid the punishment and therefore be disciplined enough to follow the rules, to obey. The idea is that you must obey. In this, if you are disciplined enough to do this, there's a secondary effect, and that is you can go out there in the world, pursue your self-interest, and become prosperous. Morality and prosperity in this model go together. And if you're not disciplined enough to be prosperous, you're probably not disciplined enough to be moral, and you deserve your poverty. That's what these guys are about. The strict father is a moral authority to be obeyed. He is not to be talked back to. He's to be listened to. He's going to reach out to everybody who wants to listen to him. We ain't going to listen to him. We have a different understanding, both of a family and of the world, and of our nation, and of our relationships to each other. In a nurturant parent family, the job of a parent is to nurture their children and to raise their children to be nurturers of others. Nurturance is two things, empathy and responsibility for yourself and others, and that takes strength. You can't be a weakling and be a nurturing parent because there's too many responsibilities you have to fulfill. If you understand that, empathy and responsibility, the rest of progressive values, both in the family and in the nation, follow immediately. Why? If you care about your children, you want to protect them. Think about all of the ways protection enters into progressive thought. Worker protection, environmental protection, and consumer protection. All of the safety nets that we have, Social Security, Medicare, they come from the strong, powerful impulse, the fierce impulse to protect those who are less powerful, who need that protection. That is who we are. It's one of our major moral values. If you care about your children and your family, you want them to be treated fairly. Fairness is one of the major progressive values, and with fairness comes the value of equality. That's who we are. That's what we fight for. If you care about your children, you want them to be fulfilled in life. We want people all over, all people, to be able to be fulfilled in life. You can't be fulfilled without freedom. You can't be free without opportunity, and you can't have opportunity without general prosperity for all. Those are progressive values. That's what our morality is about. That's what we care about. That's why we vote the way we vote and live the lives we live. And we live lives in communities. We don't live alone. We are community builders. And any nurturing parent must function in a community. In a nurturing family, you have to be part of a community and you serve your community. And you can't be in a community unless you cooperate. So cooperation, not competition with each other, cooperation is our major value. You can't have cooperation without trust, and you can't have trust without honesty and open communication. They are our moral values. That is what progressive values are. We share those, and it doesn't matter what kind of progressive you are, and I want to talk about that. There are various types of progressives. And if you ask the sociologist to go and study how many types there are, they'd probably come up with hundreds. But if you ask a cognitive scientist, that's me, how many types there are, I'd ask a different question. I want to know how many modes of thought there are on the progressive side. I've looked at it. So far, I have found six. Not hundreds, six. And they're not mutually exclusive. By the way, all six are correct. There's nothing wrong. They're all part of nurturing values. All right, first, socioeconomic progressives who care mainly about economics and class. Yes, economics and class matter. Identity politics progressives who say it's time for our oppressed group to get its share now. Yes, it is time, whatever the oppressed group. Greens. Those of you who are here, those of you putting on these exhibits, they talk about sustainability of the earth, the sacredness of the earth, and that's also true. Spiritual progressives understand whether it's God or the universe as nurturant. They understand a connection to each other and a connection to the world, and their spiritual practice is service. That's what a spiritual progressive is. No matter what kind they are, in whatever religion or whatever spiritual community. There are civil liberties progressives, those who want to defend our liberties, and they need defense. And there are anti-authoritarian progressives, those who are opposed and offended by illegitimate uses of authority. And that's also a genuine progressive value. The terrible thing is to think that if you have one of these thoughts or two, that you are better than every other progressive. That's the mistake. That separates us from each other, and we can't afford to be separated from each other. If you think in terms of our common moral values, then we are strong. If you start breaking us down, then we are weak. We have to be strong. From those moral values, we get certain political principles. One, political equality. That means equality of power, real power in the world and in this country, independent of how much money you have, independent of what kind of work you do or who you were born as. Two, equity. What does equity mean? It means something very simple. If you work for a living, you should earn a living, period. What is the role of government? The role of government is first is to promote equity and political equality and to protect it and protect our freedoms and to carry out those moral responsibilities. Government is moral, and it has been traditionally moral all through our history. What are the greatest achievements of government in this, you know, in this country? They are moral achievements. The freedom of slaves, women's voting, the Civil Rights Act, the great reorientation of government during the New Deal toward government for the people, really for the people. Government, as we understand it, is for all of us. It's for our future and for our children. And it has to be efficient. It's not there to be inefficient, but it's got to be for us, period. Moreover, what is foreign policy about? Foreign policy is about extending these same values to the world. Not just in building international community, where you have diplomacy, where you work with other nations. But the most important issues in foreign policy are now not defined as foreign policy. What are the most important issues? Take terrorism, for example, which is real. It is not at the level of the state. It is below the level of the nation state. Take poverty in the world. It is below the level of the nation state. Take international ecology, global warming. That is not a nation state problem. It is not about competition between nation states. Take overpopulation. What is the best cure for overpopulation? Women's education and women's rights. That is not at the level of the state. It's an international problem, person by person, and so on. The major problems in the world have to do with people and our relationship to them, and the people working on that right now are the international NGOs. Right now, the right wing is trying to destroy them, trying to defund them. They need to be defended like never before and appreciated like never before. What is it that separates us? Many things. Some of us are pragmatic, others are idealistic. It's important that the idealists not look down upon the pragmatists or the pragmatists on the idealists. We have to know that that is a line that separates us and it cannot separate us. We have to be very clear about it. There are some of us who are militant and some of us who want to go step by step. That divides us. We have to notice when you're militant, when you want to go step by step, and then ask, what do you share? You share moral principles, you share political principles, and you share one thing that's usually not recognized. That is policy directions that come out of your moral and political principles. As soon as you go to policy, what's wrong with a policy wonk? Everything. Because policy wonks look at particular details rather than the whole picture from a moral perspective and a principled perspective. We all have common, shared policy directions one level up from the particular policies. That's where we're united. Example, We all want a sustainable economy, no matter what kind of progressive we are. We all want universal health insurance, no matter what kind of progressive we are. We don't want the government in our bedrooms, no matter what kind of progressive we are, and so on. We want rights recognized, no matter what kind of progressive we are. We can make lists easily of policy directions that we all agree on. That's where we must be united from here on out. Now, let me talk a bit about framing. The latest book I have out, which is available there, is called Don't Think of an Elephant. And it comes from an exercise I give in a course I'll be teaching this spring at Berkeley, The Mind and Language, Cognitive Science 101. I start out by asking my students to do the following. Don't think of an elephant. Whatever you do, do not think of an elephant. And nobody can do it. Why? Because, I mean, remember that every word, like elephant, is defined by some conceptual frame and some image, perhaps. You have an image of an elephant that comes up. You have knowledge about elephants, right? The word elephant immediately evokes that. You can't not think of an elephant and follow that direction. Now, remember Richard Nixon. He stood up there during Watergate on national TV and said, "I am not a crook." We all thought of him as a crook. You can't use the other side's language without using and evoking the other side's ideas. They have certain ways of thinking about the world. What follows about ecology? Suppose you look at a strict father model. What does that say about the environment? First, in a strict father model of the world, there is a hierarchy that pairs merit and morality with power. The idea is that the most moral people should be the most powerful people. And they see God, therefore, as both the all-powerful and the all-good together, forming this hierarchy. How do you know what's in the hierarchy? You go and look at traditional forms of power. What do you have? God above man above nature, adults above children, Americans above other countries, Western civilization above other civilizations, and then, of course, it gets worse. Men above women, whites above non-whites, straights above gays, Christians above non-Christians, for the bigots. Not all conservatives have those. They all have the first five. Now, man above nature. What does it say? It says nature is a resource for human beings. Who is a good human being? A good human being is someone who follows his self-interest to become prosperous. What is a bad human being? Someone who either isn't disciplined enough to do that or stands in the way of the good guys. Why is it good to follow your self-interest in a strict father world? It follows as a generalization of Adam Smith's view of capitalism. Adam Smith said, defining capitalism, if everybody pursues their own profit, then as a law of nature, the profit, that is by the invisible hand, as he called it, the profit of all will be maximized. So if everybody pursues their own self-interest, the self-interest of all will be maximized in this model. If you believe that, what is somebody who is pursuing the public interest as opposed to the private interest? That's a do-gooder who's standing in the way, getting in the way of the good people trying to make a buck. That's who you are. That's who I am. That is somebody not respected or thought well of from a conservative perspective. What is environmentalism? Environmentalism is a group of people who are standing in the way of people who who just want to get natural resources for their profit, which is what, according to conservatives, people should be doing. Very important. For them, nature is not sacred, it is a resource. Now, some of them will admit it might be a renewable resource and some of them might not, but it's very important. It's seen as a resource there. Nature is more than just a resource. Yes, it's a resource for all of us, but it's a resource that we borrow from our children to give back to them. We borrow this resource and we have to preserve it so that it will be there for everyone, and it is a sacred part of who we are. Now, how do we think of the environment, and how do we account for a certain fact that often puzzles environmentalism? There are polls done regularly asking people if they're environmentalists or in favor of preserving the environment, and regularly 70-80% of the people will say, yes, I'm in favor of preserving the environment, and then they don't vote that way. Why? The reason is that people don't vote in terms of a list of interests or issues. They vote their identity. And if they identify with strict father values, they will vote for people who have those values, and those people have anti-environmental values. So it's very important, if you want to get a change in the electorate to be pro-environmental, you have to get an understanding of an environment out there. You have to reframe it so that people will identify themselves in terms of the environment. What changes have to be made? First, anybody who knows the first thing about ecology knows that ecology, there's ecological systems. Issues are not separate from other issues. Environment is not separate from health. Environment is a health issue. Environment isn't separate from business. It's a business issue. It has to do with business practices, and we have many green businesses here who are committed to the idea that, yes, the business of America is business, and it should be environmentally sound business and environmentally responsible business. It's not anti-business. It's pro-responsible, environmentally sound business. Many people identify themselves in terms of their well-being, their health, and their jobs. We have to have the environment associated with that implicitly. Secondly, in terms of values, the environment is a moral issue. The environment has everything to do with protection. Protection not only of the environment itself, but of health, of our children's health, of all sorts of marvelous things in that environment. Secondly, the environment has everything to do with all of the other things we care about. It has to do with community because it serves all of us. It's part of us. We cannot abandon it. It's there. It has to do with opportunity. If the environment is destroyed, opportunities are cut off. Things will get worse if the environment is not sustained and made sustainable. Opportunity, remember, has everything to do with freedom. No freedom without opportunity. You don't understand, people don't understand that environmentalism and freedom are linked in that way. If you don't preserve and sustain your environment, you'll lose opportunity and lose freedom.
At this point, Dr. Lakoff ended his talk and began to take questions from the audience.
George, thanks for your work. I wondered how many political campaigns contacted you or you them, and if there were any, there was any utilization of your linguistic analysis to get through in the current round of campaigns.
I was asked by one of the people who is central to the Kerry campaign to give one-way input every week to send some suggestions, and I did for about 15 weeks. Some of them were used in, say, in the convention speech, but on the whole, they didn't get it. And you can understand it. The way it was structured, Bob Schrum set out the original idea for the campaign, which was a terrible losing idea. And there was no way he was going to change his mind. Occasionally they would take examples that, you know, you'd notice Kerry started talking about values but only used the word values. He didn't know how to talk about values. He didn't really deeply talk about them. He had no idea how to answer most of the values questions and how to frame issues, his issues in terms of values. you would write him, you would write stuff, and, you know, it would go into the vacuum. That's how it was.
Oh, one other thing, just with regards to the Christian Coalition that came out so powerfully and may have been the cause for the popular vote, how would you address them directly?
About the Christian Coalition, there are many more liberal Christians in this country than there are conservative Christians. The problem is this: most liberal Christians can't very easily express their theology and its connection to their politics. But there is a theology that is expressible and directly related to politics. It's a nurturing theology, and it's discussed. I have a book called Moral Politics. Chapter 14 goes into exactly what conservative Christianity is, why it is an instance of strict father values, and what a liberal Christianity is, and why it's an instance of nurturing values, which are the same values behind nurturing politics. What we need to do is organize the liberal churches and synagogues and mosques and Buddhist temples.
Dr. Lakoff, that's exactly where I was headed with my question. How can we do that at a grassroots level, each and every one of us? How can we begin to think and build the way that you frame it in your book?
We have a new think tank in Berkeley, the Rockridge Institute, www.rockridgeinstitute.org. And our job is to reframe public debate. We're starting, you can see the beginnings of it there. We're a young institute, we're small, we're growing, we're raising money, and we will raise a fair amount, I think. And we're going to go out there and reframe every issue, bit by bit, step by step. It's a huge job. They have 43 think tanks that's been working for 30 years to do this. We don't have 30 years, but we understand the mechanism. We understand how it works and what to do. And we're going to be doing it, and then we're going to be having connections to ordinary grassroots people. We're going to try to have an action link to advocacy groups around the country, and then have a direct link to individuals around the country via the internet. We're also going to be working with organizations like Move On, Democracy for America, with bloggers like Marcos at the Daily Coast and others. We're trying to communicate this as best we can, as soon as we can. And the first people who have to know this are our elected representatives. It is very important for our elected representatives not to cave in now. The very first reframing job has to be on the five issues that the Bush administration wants to push through Congress. We have to give everybody a way to talk about them and think about them differently, so that we cannot just obstruct but say, we're 56 million people and we have the moral traditional values of this country. We are right, and what you're proposing is immoral, and here's why, and then we tell them. That's what we're trying to do.
Yeah, hi. I want to see how you would respond to the idea of having a little bit less lecture time and a little bit more organizing time, where you could say to the audience, who is doing what? Who's doing work on abortion? Who's doing work on racism? Who's doing work on peace? And for those people who are not too active, come join me. And all those people around in the booths could do that.
This is not just about meetings. One of the things that Move On and the Dean Movement and so on has done is gotten people to do things, to write letters, to send letters, to write checks for candidates, small candidates all over the country. There is a lot for everybody to do, enormous amounts. Everyone can do things. We need 56 million people plus doing things, and you're absolutely right. Yes, but you also need to understand what you're doing and why you're doing it and how to think about it. Both are necessary.
Thank you, Dr. Lakoff. I wanted to continue on the theme of reframing, and I wanted to ask your opinion about how useful it would be to try to reframe a few things from the election. First, many of the Republican spinmeisters are trying to say that 3% represents a mandate. And what do you think that's worth jumping on and jumping against? And a more subtle thing, many people in the media are also saying that George Bush belongs to a small club of about 16 presidents that had two terms, but I've heard some people actually say he was elected twice. Is that worth reframing?
It all is, but there are major reframings and ones that work. Yeah, it's worth mentioning this and over, but it's not going to win. What's going to win is a positive vision, a positive moral vision. And there's something very important about that the Democratic Party does not understand about swing voters. There are polls done now that are the same as the ones done before. If you look at the hard conservative support in this country, it's about 35% to 40%, and the same for really hard progressive support. The swing voters between 20% and 30% are those who have both models, the nurturant and strict, in different parts of their lives. What the other side has figured out is the way to appeal to them is to talk to their base. They talk to their swing voters by talking to their base. But they also recognize that of those swing voters, most of them will have certain nurturant positions, like positions on the environment. And that is why they have to use deceptive language. They don't always have to use deceptive language, but there are certain places where they do. The Clean Air Act, the Healthy Forest Initiative. They couldn't come out and say that it's the Dirty Air Act. They couldn't come out and say, we're going to give this a true name, No Tree Left Behind. They couldn't do it because they would lose. We need to do that. They are telling us where they have identified their weaknesses. We have to follow that, and we have to activate what is nurturant in that 20 to 30% of the population. And to do that, we have to talk our values, and we have to be clear about what they really want, what they're really trying to do, and frame them in terms of their actions.
I'm a property rights advocate, and here's a conservative value I think we can all get behind. The value of what real estate folk mean by location, location, location is a community-generated value. The rental value of land is generated by the community. What do you say to the prospect of collecting that annual rent of land and using that for community purposes? The Henry George idea, if you want to get
I
have in mind.
This is part of the idea of a commons. And the idea of the commons is absolutely necessary, both in terms of common land, common air, common water, and so on. We have been bequeathed air. The air is ours. We have been bequeathed the wavelengths for our radio and TV stations. They're ours. We've been bequeathed the water that falls from the sky. It's all of ours. That is our common legacy. We need to have that. And the same for land. Now, with respect to property values, I think a real approach to property values should say that if you harm my property by polluting, you owe me something. You owe everybody something. That is, polluters should pay, period. I'm sorry, I see that time is up. I'll be signing some books, and I'd love to talk to whoever's here. So please come by.
You have been listening to Dr. George Lakoff speak at the Green Festival in San Francisco on November 6th, 2004. This program is a San Francisco Liberation Radio production. The web address of San Francisco Liberation Radio, a 24/7 internet radio station, is www.liberationradio.net. Music is by Chris Potter and Late Bake Productions. I'm Carmen LaSalle, and I thank you for listening.